This past week was a hard week for me. My family was suddenly thrust into the middle of a very strange and scary situation. Everything's okay, really. Everything is fine. And I mean that. I don't mean the way it sounds. You can tell it was hard. This week was the week I was supposed to be creating a beautiful, hope-filled sermon to deliver about healing and wholeness, humming with the good news of healing and wholeness. And I felt very broken. I was frazzled. I was two steps behind in everything. We're lucky we have a bulletin this week. You can ask the people in the office. I was more of a burden than a help in getting that done. And so it really changed my thinking about what we need to talk about on a Sunday of healing and wholeness. We don't only need the flowery, beautiful half of the gospel. We need the full thing that reaches deep into our brokenness and speaks to us there. We need to talk about those times we experience these traumatic events that feel too heavy. We need to ask, how does our sacred story offer us anything that feels like healing and wholeness? As you know, I'm in school and I'm reading a book that suggests it's our Christian tendency to jump too quickly from death to resurrection. And this tendency doesn't give us time to consider how God is present in that middle part, that Holy Saturday, as we call the Easter weekend. We can believe that God creates new life out of death. And it's also okay to acknowledge that sometimes that takes a while. And the time between crucifixion and resurrection is hard. We name it every time we say the Apostles' Creed. We name that time between the crucifixion and the resurrection when we say, "He descended into hell." The author of this book I'm reading, her name is Shelley Rambo. She says the passage from death to life is complex. It's not smooth. What persists in this image that we use of Holy Saturday is what persists when we're making this passage from death to life is feelings of forsakenness and abandonment, and hopelessness. Our theology oftentimes just glosses over the tenuous nature of life in the absence of Jesus by quickly proclaiming the victorious account of the resurrection. Loudly proclaiming life out of death is impossible when you can't seem to imagine how life will ever go on. Like the families who remain after the bombing at the mosque in New Zealand. Like the families who remain after the plane crash in Ethiopia. Like my cousin whose child died 2 years ago. Like the spouse who remains when the first one dies, living with an addiction like profound illness, these are our Holy Saturday times when we're in the abyss. We can lose meaning, and we can lose our trust in this world. So we have to ask, what does our sacred story tell us that offers healing and wholeness? If we allow ourselves to read our stories with this lens, it tells us a lot. It tells us about Job, tells us about Jonah, who spent all of his time struggling and striving and feeling lost and abandoned, tells us about Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene. And it tells us about the witnesses to Jesus' death. It's hard to imagine the brutality of that death that they witnessed and the grief they must have felt trying to move forward. Our reading today that I read is a part of that story, and I decided rather than read the whole thing, I would tell you, because stories are always better than just reading. So this happened after the resurrection. The disciples were together, fishing, doing what we do, trying to get back to routine, trying to move on and figure out, if I just keep doing the same thing, surely it'll feel right and I can get back to life. Trying to get over these traumatic events that they didn't understand. And Jesus shows up on the beach over there. So they head to him. And of course, he feeds them breakfast. That's what Jesus always does, feeds people. And then he asked Peter to take a walk. And they're having this conversation, part of which we read. It's the part where Jesus keeps asking Peter, "Do you love me?" And Peter says, "Yes." And he says, "Feed my sheep, tend my lambs." So they're walking, and Jesus says, "Follow me," which we've always interpreted as Peter will die, as Jesus died. But the conversation's a little bit interrupted because Peter notices there's somebody back there kind of following them in the background. And he says, "Well, what about him?" This is another one of the disciples. And Jesus says, "What is it to you if he remains, if he continues living, if he continues in order to tell the story?" In that one sentence, the focus of this story turns from one death after another death to the one who will continue to tell about that great love. That's what it meant to remain in the wake of Jesus' death and resurrection. What does it mean to be beloved and remain in the wake of death? Rambo, the author, says this figure of the beloved, that one kind of lagging behind, is the figure of survival. The one who remains is the sign for us that love persists. This witness, the beloved disciple, the way he told the story, teaches us that our lives are reconfigured at the intersection of death and life. It's not a quick jump from one to the other. Things aren't just going to stay the same. But death's remainder is always carried forward into life. Life does continue, though changed. Last night, I went to a fundraiser for the youth at Shalom International Ministries. This is a PCUSA congregation down in Clarkston. If you don't know them, you should. They're amazing. They're in that one most diverse mile in the United States. The vision of Shalom International Ministries is Jeremiah 29. Seek the shalom, the peace, the healing, the wholeness of your community. For it is in its shalom that you find your own shalom. The members of this church are from 15 different countries. They all speak at least three languages, probably more. Gad Mpoyo is their pastor. And this fundraiser was to send their youth to Montreat. It was a fun night. It was called Presbyterians Got Talent. And there was everything, mostly musical acts, A brother and a sister reenacted the rap battle from Hamilton. That was a lot of fun. 6 years ago, Shalom sent 5 youth to Montreat. This year, they hope to send 20. And apparently, these children, these youth from mostly African countries, are changing the Montreat Conference. They're leaders year after year, taking more and more leadership roles and teaching, learning and teaching about loving one another and being multicultural. So God told us a little bit about Shalom. The church has 4 core values. 1, worship God. 2, learn about God. And they also like to learn about their new home, the United States. The 3rd is welcome. God talks about how lonely it is to move here. And it is a core value that they welcome others who show up at their door. They work as a community to heal that wound of loneliness. Their 4th value is to heal. Many of their members arrive here from places that are full of war, and they need healing from the traumatic lives that they've lived in their old homes. This community lives out this theology of remaining. They witness to the reality that death, loss, war, trauma changes the landscape of our lives. But love still persists. This is the good news on this Sunday of healing and wholeness. Our sacred story is one that teaches us what it means to remain in the aftermath of death or illness or loss that escapes our total comprehension. Our sacred story offers us guidance for healing and wholeness to those who are in the abyss. And to witness to this telling of our sacred story, not the one that jumps too quickly from death to resurrection, but this telling that witnesses to the slow movement, to God's presence in that middle time, is also to proclaim it as the truth, that love remains. And we are all, as a community, love's witnesses. Amen.